The Government Gurus is a podcast developed by AP Government teachers designed to cover the new AP curriculum. The mission of the Gurus is to help teachers engage students through a thoughtful conversation on the material and to provide teachers with strategies to produce the best classroom experience for their students. So please join us on this exciting journey as we explore our constitution, its principles, and discuss the complex issues facing our society today.
No union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than they once were, and would misunderstand petitioners to say that they disrespect or diminish the idea of marriage in these cases. They're pleased that they do respect it. They respect it so deeply they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law, and the Constitution grants them that right.
And with those words in his opinion, Justice Kennedy delivered a stunning victory for LGBTQ members and allowing same-sex marriages within the country, invalidating 35 states' decisions on defining marriage as between a man and a woman. And for the first episode back for the Government Gurus, I decided to take a look at LGBTQ rights, suspect classification, and whether or not homosexuals or LGBTQ members should have protections in the workforce. So thank you for joining us again. This is the Government Gurus. All right. Well, thank you for coming back to the podcast. I think it's been about 7 months since my last interview with Mary Beth Tinker, which went very well. And over the summer, I was busy and traveling, and I haven't had the time to try to get teachers to come back on the podcast. So today's is going to be a little bit different, just going to be me. So hopefully you enjoy what I sound like and not having to have anyone else on here, you know, talking back and answering questions. So hopefully I can keep you interested. So the court decided to take up several cases, like I said, and two of them were consolidated, Altitude Express and Bostic, and a third case with dealing with a funeral home. So the essential question is, does Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protect LGBTQ members? And it's based on a couple things. One, there's the person's status as a transgender, and two, sex stereotyping. Because does sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protect that? The Civil Rights Act of 64 prohibits employees from being discriminated on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. So does that mean when we talk about sex in 1964, are we talking about gender and gender only? And if I'm being fired because of who I love, a man and a man or a woman and a woman, is that discrimination based on sex? You're discriminating me based on my sexual orientation. And this is the thing that the courts have to decide. And I want you to remember, as teachers and students, that after the Civil Rights Act of 64, remember, the 14th Amendment only applied to state governments. It did not apply to private businesses. The Civil Rights Act of 64 tries to get the federal government into the private discrimination where they couldn't make any headway. And the court ruled in the Hearts of Atlanta case that the federal government under commerce, has the right to protect against discrimination against race, color, religion, sex, and origin. Usually this was based on color. Southern restaurants did not want to serve African Americans, but let's not forget, Northern restaurants did not want to serve African Americans either. So this was a way, this act here in the Hearts of Atlanta case, was a way that the federal government could step into the private businesses and police discrimination. So there is a precedent here that, yeah, the federal government can outlaw LGBTQ discrimination, but they haven't done it. Several states have, like I believe, Massachusetts or Colorado, California. But again, there's too much inconsistency with the state. So these cases have been brought up. And like I said earlier, or Chief Justice Roberts said in his dissent in Obergefell, is that this LGBTQ rights are going to pop up again because it only decided marriage. It didn't decide anything else about discrimination. And since there are no laws protecting LGBTQ members in certain states, and there's no federal statute or laws that protect them, there can be discrimination. And so the question remains is, well, how is the court going to proceed and rule on this case or these cases? What are they looking for? And in when we look at AP government and look at what the courts have to do, there's a series of tests that have been created throughout the history of the court. And there's three types of scrutiny that they would look at, right? So the court's going to look at, well, why is a state making a law like this, right? And against what group is it going to be? And is this going to be constitutional, right? Because we have classifications, race, color, religion, sex, and origin, and they receive generally the highest protection, especially race. They have their suspect classifications, meaning at any point in the history of the country, a law against race or religion has always had discriminatory or usually had discriminatory reasons for it. So that law is automatically suspect in the eyes of the court. So that has to meet a level of strict scrutiny, meaning the government has to have a heck of a reason or a compelling state interest to do so. This means that you have to have to go against race or religion. You have to have some compelling interest. So, for example, New York State has mandated vaccinations even against religions who don't want to get it. They object to it, right? Because measles outbreak and there's people, hundreds of students being sick, that's a health crisis. So, yes, when the state of New York says you have to have a vaccine, well, wait a minute, my religion says, no, I don't have to. And they said, well, no, you're going to get it. Well, that is a violation of religion in my eyes. But the court says, no, the state has a compelling interest to do so. Secondly, it must be narrowly tailored. The law must be carefully written so that it only employs the suspect classification, in this case, religion, when absolutely necessary. So the religion would only have to break its, go against its religious code for vaccination. Not anything, nothing else could the state do to force it into compliance with any other law that they would like. And then finally, under strict scrutiny, it must be the least restrictive way. And in this case, it would be. Vaccinations are the only way you can be protected against virus or deadly viruses, right? Okay. And so do LGBTQ members fall under that category? Well, we're not sure. Another category that triggers scrutiny, but not as restrictive, is its intermediate scrutiny. And generally, laws or things that are different between genders fall under this category. So, for example, Craig versus Boren, the Supreme Court found a law that which allowed a sale of certain kind of alcohol to women between 18 to 21 and not men violated the 14th Amendment, right? So there was no compelling reason for the state to say girls can drink at this age, guys, you can't. There was no interest. It failed to meet that standard, but it didn't have to have a compelling interest. It just had, isn't important. Well, we want to reduce traffic fatalities. We want to reduce drinking and driving. So we thought, guys tend to drink more than girls. And so we're going to make this law. And the court said, no, it didn't have to meet the highest standard, but it didn't meet this middle of the road standard. And then finally, a rational basis, right? only meet these conditions. Controlling is, for example, what is considered a basic legitimate interest? Can the state say you can drive at 16? Yes. Can you drive at 18? Yes. That would be something rational that the state could do. And so that's the lowest form of test. So strict scrutiny, intermediate, and rational basis. That brings us to the LGBTQ suspect classification and the Civil Rights Act of 64, because right now LGBTQ doesn't fall within this idea of suspect class, which means you have to have some obvious immutable characteristics, something that cannot be changed. There has to be distinguishing characteristics that define them as a group. They're politically powerless, and that they've had a history of discrimination, like I said. And it appears that LGBT or sexual orientation could fall under this suspect class. It was found in Ling versus Castillo by Justice John Paul Stevens and in Caroline Products in the 1947. So there's a couple cases where the courts have laid out, well, what is considered a suspect, and it's a mutable trait, history of discrimination, and are they politically powerless? Well, if I said that to you, and if you looked at it, it appears that LGBTQ members could fall under this. However, there's no legal consensus for this. And so do they fall under the suspect class or a quasi-suspect class or a non-suspect class? Gays and lesbians clearly fulfill, like I said, the first criteria. But can the president openly ban transgenders? Well, we don't as of right now. Yes, but is that detrimental? And do they fall under this classification for protection because they have had history of discrimination? And so this is where the court has to really make a decision. The passage suggests that, and this court suggests that members of a suspect class or quasi class will often have suffered and are recognized for these traits. And now the court moving forward with a 5-4 majority leaning towards the conservatives, how are they going to address this issue? And we don't really understand or know where the court is going to go. So I wanted to clarify that even though homosexuals still have a right to marry, they have a right to exist because of a court case, Lawrence v. Texas, in 2003. It was finally legal for two adults to be in a same-sex relationship. Up until that point, it was illegal and could be illegal in certain states because the court ruled earlier in 1989 in Bowers versus Hardwick that homosexuality and the behavior could be controlled by the state. It could be illegal. And so it's important to understand what is decided in the courts and where does it apply is not a universal application of protection. Homosexuals in by 2020 and maybe the early part of summer, June, when the court decides on these three cases, they might kick it back to the states. The states are laboratories of democracy, and they will decide whether or not LGBTQ members will be discriminated against or protected. Conservative justices will tend to lean on the states and the people to make those decisions. You could argue that this conservative ideology will allow same things that people did during the civil rights movement, stop shopping and buying from places. Montgomery bus boycotts, hurt them with a wallet. Or you could take the more liberal or progressive view of like, no, the government needs to step in and make this decision for people. And this is where we are seeing a big time struggle between the rights of religion or right to freedom of conscience versus sexual orientation. The freedom of conscience and the freedom of religion, the exercise thereof is written in the Constitution. The idea of protections for homosexuals and discrimination isn't found in there. It's not found in the 14th Amendment. It's not found right now in the Civil Rights Act of 64. So the federal government would have to write a law, or if you're homosexual LGBTQ, you would have to depend on your state to write that law. If neither of them have that, there are no protections for you. Places like Michigan and other southern and southern states like Texas do not have protections for discriminatory practices on serving people in restaurants by serving people. I think it's Diesel Tech in Michigan who the owner went out on Facebook and said, "I'm not serving homosexuals, don't come in here." And there's no protection in Michigan for them. So if a person wanted to go to this business and be served, they don't have that right. Now, you may be thinking, well, what about the masterpiece cake, the cake baking case, right? And the cake baker who said it was a violation of his freedom of conscience to compel speech and write a message for homosexuals. And it's an interesting case, but it doesn't answer discrimination. And the court didn't rule that the baker had a right to discriminate. What they ruled was is that the state of Colorado were hostile to his religious views. At the time the baker denied services, homosexuals did not have a right to marry in Colorado. That came after the fact. So in the masterpiece cake baking, although the court ruled in favor of the cake baker, it did not give him a universal application or businesses a universal application to discriminate. That question was not answered in that case. It was remanded back to Colorado, and basically the state of Colorado has to treat religious conscience and beliefs more appropriately and less hostile. And that comes from the decision written by Anthony Kennedy, who's been a huge proponent of gay and homosexual rights and LGBTQ rights during his reign. But he retired in the summer of 2018. And that kind of brings us to this point here. So I hope you enjoyed this little lecture from me, Alex Bennett. Please continue to follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and hopefully we'll get some more podcasts out. Please, if you're interested as a teacher, email me at thegovernmentgurus@gmail.com, and I look forward to your comments. Have a wonderful evening.